हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सारि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 19. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs Srila Rupa Goswami. So, page 71. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expanded his mercy to Srila Rupa Goswami just so he could render service by writing transcendental literatures. The characteristics of Sri Rupa Goswami have thus been described in various places by the poet Kavi Karnapur. An account has also been given of how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bestowed his causeless mercy upon Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were the objects of love and honor for all the great stalwart devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If someone returned to his country after seeing Vrindavan, the associates of the Lord would ask him questions. They would ask those returning from Vrindavan, how are Rupa and Sanatana doing in Vrindavan? What are their activities in the renounced order? How do they manage to eat? These were the questions asked. The Lord's associates would also ask, how is it that Rupa and Sanatana are engaged in devotional service 24 hours daily? At that time, the person who had returned from Vrindavan would praise Srila Rupa and Srila Sanatana Goswamis. The brothers actually have no fixed residence. They reside beneath trees, one night under one tree, and the next night under another. Srila Rupa and Sanatana beg a little food from the houses of Brahmanas. Giving up all kinds of material enjoyment, they take only some dry bread and some fried chickpeas. They carry only water pots and they wear torn quilts. They always chant the holy names of Krishna and discuss his pastimes. In great jubilation, they also dance. They engage almost 24 hours daily in rendering service to the Lord. They usually sleep only an hour and a half, and some days, when they continuously chant the Lord's holy name, they do not sleep at all. Sometimes they write transcendental literatures about devotional service, and sometimes they hear about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and spend their time thinking about the Lord. When the personal associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would hear of the activities of Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, they would say, what is wonderful for a person who has been granted the Lord's mercy? Srila Prabhupada. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami had no fixed residence. They stayed beneath a tree for one day only and wrote huge volumes of transcendental literature. They not only wrote books, but chanted, danced, discussed Krishna, and remembered Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Thus, they executed devotional service. In Vrindavan, there are Prakriti Sahajiyas who say that writing books or even touching books is taboo. For them, devotional service means being relieved from these activities. Whenever they are asked to hear a recitation of Vedic literature, they refuse, saying, "What business do we have reading or hearing transcendental literatures? They are meant for neophytes." They pose themselves as too elevated to exert energy for reading, writing, and hearing. However, pure devotees under the guidance of Srila Rupa Goswami reject this Sahajiya philosophy. It is certainly not good to write literature for money or reputation, but to write books and publish them for the enlightenment of the general populace is real service to the Lord. That was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's opinion. And he specifically told his disciples to write books. He actually preferred to publish books rather than establish temples. Temple construction is meant for the general populace and neophyte devotees, but the business of advanced and empowered devotees is to write books, publish them, and distribute them widely. According to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Distributing literature is like playing on a great mridanga. Consequently, we always request members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to publish as many books as possible and distribute them widely throughout the world. By thus following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami, one can become a Raghunuga devotee. A Rupanuga devotee, excuse me. 219, 133-135. Srila Rupa Goswami was personally spoken has personally spoken about the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his auspicious introduction to his book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 112. Quote, although I am the lowest of men and have no knowledge, the inspiration to write transcendental literatures about devotional service has been mercifully bestowed upon me. Therefore, I am offering my obeisances at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given me the chance to write these books. For 10 days, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed at Prayag and instructed Rupa Goswami, empowering him with the necessary potency. Remember, it's that the jivas on the material platform are inspired by the material energy, right? Because the gross and subtle bodies they have in the particular situations that the modes of nature arrange then inspires them to do some activity for their own benefit, you know, for sense gratification. And so, because of that, then they are endeavoring. But we see that the living entities that are on the transcendental platform, then they're inspired by the Lord, right? And so then here we have that aspect about how the Lord is inspiring Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, and they're writing so many volumes of books. Right?
So Maharaj, everybody is acting after having inspiration.
Yes, because thinking, feeling, and willing, only after willing is something done.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Means you think about something, you know, yes, then, you know, it's something you think about. Feeling about it, it's kind of like, okay, well, that looks more serious.
Yes.
Then from that, you get willing, you want to do.
Yes.
Then you'll act.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that means the willing aspect represents the Abhideya platform.
Yes.
But then there's the application of that.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So... Srila Prabhupada. This is a confirmation of the statement Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartana. Unless one is specifically empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he cannot spread the Krishna consciousness movement. An empowered devotee sees and feels himself to be the lowest of men, for he knows that whatever he does is due to the inspiration given by the Lord in the heart. This is confirmed by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 10:10. Tesham satata yuktanam pajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. To be empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has to qualify himself. Right? So it's not that unqualified people are being empowered. It's qualified people are being empowered. So that's why someone can't just say, oh, I am empowered, I'm doing this and that. No, but it's not according to what Lord Chaitanya teaches or the others do. No, no, but I'm empowered. I do. No. This means that one must engage 24 hours daily in the loving devotional service of the Lord. The material position of a devotee doesn't matter because the devotional service is not dependent on material considerations. Right? Material considerations are engaged, but they don't create devotion. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let us say, having utensils in the kitchen, having, you know, various ingredients, like that doesn't create cooking. Right? It's the individual, they're inspired. And so whatever's there, with that they can work. But the idea, no, no, if we have this, then, you know, devotional... No, no, devotional service doesn't require that. Those things are coming anyway by the performance of your duties or like that. Then you engage them in the Lord's service. That's natural. So, yeah. In his earlier life, Srila Rupa Goswami was a government officer and a grihastha. So he mentioned he was a grihastha. He was not even a brahmachari or sannyasi. He associated with mlechas and yavanas. But because he was always eager to serve, he was a qualified recipient for the Lord's mercy. Because he was always eager to serve, so that's the qualification. One's inspired to serve, right? A sincere devotee can therefore be empowered by the Lord regardless of a situation. That's the point. So the sincerity is more important than the external environment. But it means in the performance of your duty, you'll try to improve the environment for devotional service. But it's not that the improvement of the environment is what creates the devotional service. It just means that now you'll perform service in that environment. Maybe more comfortable, maybe this and that. But devotion means your devotion for the Lord. It's not impeded or enhanced by anything material. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj, in order to be empowered, will the devotee must receive the service from the authority?
Yes, but it doesn't mean that he specifically has to be told and this and that. It just means these are the services that, like Prabhupada's saying, you know, that what you do. And then under authority, you take those and do, then it works. You know what I'm saying? Let's say just, you know, here, because we're talking about the book distribution. So then, all, you know, the brahmacharis are going to go out, or, you know, devotees are going to go out and do book distribution and all that. So they all climb in the van and they go out. But it's not that he has to tell you, no, you have to sit there in that seat and then go out, stand on this corner, and then you hold the book in your left hand. And then, no, it's just a general thing. So that there might be a specific, but otherwise sometimes you get this sentimental thing where devotees, they want to be given their, you know, very specific Guru Dutta Desh and all that. And so Guru Maharaj, you know, what exactly do you want me to do and like that, you know, and stuff like that. And so that's not necessarily, you know, that important like that. If there is something and it's given, then that's very nice. But it's not like, oh no, but unless he personally instructs me and gives me and then I don't have and not like this, no. Because everything's given. Lord Chaitanya's given, it's all there, so we can take it up. Like we were mentioning, there was that person who had never met the devotees, didn't even know that they existed, didn't know there was ISKCON, but he found a book. And he read the book and found out that you're supposed to distribute books, so therefore he copied them. And then was on the train and distributing books. Then he met the devotees.
Yes.
Like that, so.
I met also one couple in France.
Yeah?
They bought some books in second hand, like that.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
And they started to read, to practice. They make some deity of Jagannath. And after they met devotee. And they say, oh, you're also practicing?
When they met you?
No, not me, but some other devotee in France, you know?
Oh, okay.
They were for a few years alone with the books, and they're chanting 16 hours a day, 4 pounds a day.
Really? And yes. Then they met the devotees?
Yes. And they were surprised. Both of them were surprised.
Both were surprised. Oh, others are doing this. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty far out. That's the thing, Krishna inspires. So, so that's the point, is it's the sincerity that is there. That's the point. You're always trying to be engaged, it's sincere, like that. That's what then is the qualification. So a sincere devotee can therefore be empowered by the Lord regardless of his situation. In the preceding verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami has described how he's personally empowered by the Lord. He further states in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1.2.187, Iha yasya harer dasye, Karmana manasa gira, nikila svap yavastasu jivan muktas sauchate. A person acting in the service of Krishna with his body, mind, and words is a liberated person, even in the material world, although he may be engaged in so many so-called material activities. Because we call them, we look at activities, and the activity itself is what makes it material is spiritual. But actually, it's doing things to please Krishna is spiritual. Doing things, you know, to please yourself, that's material. Like that. Does that make sense? Now, there's naturally certain activities that aren't recommended. And so then that's another thing. But see, the difficulty comes up is if one comes from you know, these backgrounds of you know, these Malecha and Yavana backgrounds, then the difficulty comes up is that whatever one's doing most likely is not recommended. You know, in other words, if you've made a lifestyle, a sadhana, out of breaking the four regulative principles, then there's a good chance you might have to change a lot of things to take up devotional service. So we have to be careful not to make the mistake that, therefore, there's a particular set of activities that are devotional, and only those are, and outside of that is not. You know, so then that's the difficulty that will come up, is that we can only see those external forms, right? But as one advances, one sees the important thing is hearing and chanting, associating devotees, hearing Bhagavatam, worshiping, these kind of activities. Then you'll see that they can be family persons, they can have an occupation, they may make money, all these different things, but it's not material because they're just taking care of themselves and engaging in service. Does that make sense? Yeah. So one has to be very careful like that. Because in you know, earlier days, okay, yes, it was quite obvious because you're in the West and then it's either they're doing devotional service or they're really not. But as one goes on, then one has to start to see is that that's what the whole Varnashram and everything is about. Because if someone's living in the temple and engaging full-time there and being maintained by the temple, they're just doing services as needed, then things work very smoothly. But if one's living out in the community and all that, then there are going to be a lot of activities that look material but don't necessarily have to be. You know, so as soon as you introduce the community, that means introducing Varnashram, then all these things, it will fall into place. Now it's the mentality. It's done like this. It's for Krishna. It's not done like this. Then yes, it'll have a material, or it may be mixed. You know, but we can tell the difference. The point is pure devotional service means it's about Krishna, to please Krishna without karma and jnana.
Yes.
Right. So I may be doing my activities, thinking of Krishna, but it may not necessarily be to please Krishna.
Yes.
Or it may be to please Krishna, but it's also to please myself. Yeah, so like that, then you have to see. Then these subtler aspects, because otherwise you get that difficulty is that, oh, only these are devotional service. But then at the same time, so we have to be practical, and so we can't be fanatic and all that. And so therefore, to not be fanatic, then basically you have to take on the Western lifestyle.
Yes.
And everything like that, Western occupation, everything.
Yes.
And so then in so doing, you don't make the distinction between what's in the mode of goodness and what's due to passion, attachment to passion and ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And so one can't. So that's the difficulty. If one doesn't accept Varnashram, one can't really make this distinction. It makes it very, very difficult. You know, if one's just preaching nicely and all that, he might be able to be very accommodated, very liberal. But if you're talking about community, then without this structure, how will you expand on this? Because you're saying, you're taking a thing as, you know, this full-time devotional service, that's the service, basically temple life. Anything outside is maya. But at the same time, since we have to be practical and live in this environment of maya, then at the same time, why we have, you know, we can't live that same lifestyle. But then they're not using the traditional ways of living that lifestyle as recommended by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And so then they'll take up just what the karmis are doing. And then at the same time, we're being practical. The others are being fanatic. So actually our being practical, as Prabhu mentioned this morning, we're actually better. So but then all you've done is cultivated your own attachments. Right? Means yes, you have to do, but Yudhishthir wasn't doing his duties, he wasn't maintaining himself. You know. So that's the thing, is that everybody's taking care. Bhakti Vinod Thakur was you know, a chief chief magistrate.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? Chief magistrate.
I think so.
District magistrate. Yeah. Because they're the judge. The district magistrate is the law of the district. Because I think he's connected with the police. course. So he's connected in that line. Like that. But at the same time as they run the courts and that, it's a very interesting kind of position. And so, you know, he's taking care of family and all that, and he didn't have a small family, you know, like that. And so then, you know, plenty was going on, and he was doing so much. His sadhana was going on, he was studying, he was writing books, you know, meeting people, you know, taking care of the family, you know, doing all these different things. And so, one has to see is that the Christian consciousness is given, and in the beginning, no one knows anything, and, you know, they're all young and all this, that living in the temple works very nicely for them. After training, then those who need to live in the community could. And then when you're making devotees, you can work within the community, and that was the idea of the whole Namhatta preaching. Is that you're living in the community, you're preaching in the community, making people devotees in the community, training people in the community. But it's dynamic because you're actually teaching and training people and cultivating people in the community. Otherwise, people talk about community meaning, oh, we're all lovey-dovey, but where's the training in the community? How do they advance in Krishna consciousness? Where's the sadhu sangha? That's generally, I haven't seen, is the focus of the discussion. It's always the socio-economic element. Mm-hmm. It's not actually spiritual. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. So in that case, then everybody has different jobs than that anyway, so then how are you going to mix that? And as soon as you say, no, it's on the ashram side, but that means it has to be spiritual. Mm-hmm. Ashram's not social. It's spiritual. Mm-hmm. Occupations, that's social. Does that make sense? You know, so that's why you have that, you know, meetings at lunch, you know, with business people and, you know, networking and all that kind of stuff. That's where the social is. Within the ashram side, that's when you meet with devotees at sadhu sangha and prasad and kirtan and, you know, doing nice things or having friends you sit with and, you know, stuff like that. Yes.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he makes that point that neophyte, he feels connection to the Lord only in the temple or in the church like that. As soon as he's out of that environment, he feels completely disconnected on his own.
Yes.
Then the Varnashrama principle is introduced, which connects, you know, culturally everything.
Yes.
But then the difficulty is that Rupa Goswami in our main scripture, you know, Nectar of Devotion, doesn't mention Varnashrama like at all, like zero. He doesn't say nothing about Varnashrama.
Right.
And in 64 items, you know, angas of the devotional service, he isn't there.
Right.
So then devotees say, you know, how, if it's so important,
why is it mentioned there?
Yeah, how come he isn't mentioned there? So means basically we are on our own, and then we can do as we like.
But does he mention that in the Nectar of Devotion?
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, so then, you know, it should be balanced. It would be just like this. Let us say you're in, you're doing, you know, you're doing a, you know, an undergraduate or a postgraduate study, and let's say we're doing it in some field of mathematics. Okay, now when we're in there, in those books that you have, do they talk about the importance of, you know, A, B, C? I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, and knowing your times tables, and, you know, doing all those things. No. So then, why does Nectar Devotion have to talk about that? These are all the elements that come up in Sambandha Gyan. Yes. Then you're going to apply it. Nectar Devotion is applying what you already know, the knowledge, the skills you have. So if you haven't already learned about all these things before, then how are you going to use? So he's showing how you connect it. Why? In Nectar Devotion, no one in the Nectar Devotion, any of those examples, they were all temple devotees. No, they were family people. And so And they were not doing their particular duties and stuff like that. Remember? So that's the whole thing, is that you have to know what literature it is. It's the Abhideya Shastra. He's the Abhideya Acharya. So therefore, if you check out Sanatana Goswami's works, he doesn't talk about these things. Of course he talks about it, because that's where it's talked about. You know? So that's the whole thing. You know, it's like when you're cooking, are you talking about the menu, or you worked out the menu before you started cooking? Best is before, yeah. You might work it out, do it on the fly, but... So that's the difficulty. They'll say, oh, he doesn't mention it because that's not his business. That's been mentioned by Sanatana Goswami. He's showing how to apply what Sanatana Goswami's taught. Even the 64 items, he's pulling that from Sanatana Goswami. So that's the difficulty, is that it's just it is due to lack of understanding and appreciation of the tradition and all that. But at the same time, as it's so comfortably used as an excuse. Because the whole point is, oh, he doesn't mention it, so I can do whatever I want. So where did he say you can do whatever you want? He talks about Vaidhi Bhakti. That's not do whatever you want. The principle is regulate your life in connection with Krishna. So how do you do that? And the point is, okay, that's one book. And then in every book that Prabhupada talks about, he doesn't talk about Varnashram? Like that. It's like every other, every third purport, some sections, every purport. And so why not take all that and now apply that with this nectar devotion, and then you do. So it's not that enough dearth is not there. It's that there's so much volume on considering, you know, the Vedic culture, Vedic religion. Because by philosophy we're Vaishnav, but in religion then we follow the Vedic tenets. Like that. So it's just a matter of understanding what you're dealing with. You know, so that's why the importance is if you have that focus, everything else will fall in line. If you're managing, that is taking your nature and engaging in Krishna service. But if you don't know what nature is, how do you even know if you're supposed to manage or not? Or someone else does have a potential to manage, that you engage them in that way. So the whole point is why these things aren't understood is so much more efficient. If you understand the scientific way that socially everything works and the structure works, then management goes very smoothly. And if you don't, then there's so much trouble. So the very thing that will make it work, we avoid. You know what I mean? I mean, we have to be honest and say, okay, Covey's got a bald head, we've got bald heads, he's got a philosophy on management, so we should use his. Right? No? Like that. But whatever it is, the point is that if you don't understand the structure, is that because we're taking it, management is the overall thing. But management is done as a management thing of administration. Who's it done by? It's done by Kshatriyas. So what about Brahmins, Vaishyas, and Shudras? What about Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas? So that's one out of eight. So you can see it's a smaller thing. And if we're saying management, everybody manages. So you don't have to be a manager and say that you're the man, because everybody's doing management. You know, it's like everyone's breathing. No, I'm breathing here, you know, like that. You know, it's like, no, everyone's breathing. What are you talking about? And so therefore, then, if you're looking at the whole system, then who holds that system together? Who understands the system and sees that it runs properly? That's the Brahmins. They understand it. They train. They teach. So then that means who's the head of society? The Brahminical, not the managers. Since when have managers become the thing? That's the whole point. So then you have to appreciate what's going on here. So Rupa Goswami, then he is bringing out. Now, here's someone who... Now, do we ever hear of Rupa and all that and then falling back on that? You know, or Sanatana Goswami? Here is probably, you could say, compared to anyone now, that the best manager on the planet, there would be no one could compare to Sanatana Goswami, and the best at economics on the planet is Rupa Goswami. You know? Because they were running a very big place at that time. You know? I mean, even as it is now between Bengal and East Bengal, or Bangladesh, I think you have over, 250 million people. Yeah. And it's a little dinky place. And now you throw in part of Orissa, whatever you could grab of anywhere else, you probably have like 300 million people. That's the size of America.
Yes.
You know? And that was then. And that's in a little place. You know, so that would be like you're all those people packed in, you know, just in, you know, New York State. You know, or half of California. You know, that would take much more management, because otherwise who manages that many people? No one manages that many people. These guys were. And so they don't bring it out that they don't mention management is that important, that we make it important. They don't mean that, you know, be going off doing your own thing, you know, whatever you feel like. They don't mention that either. So they're smart enough, they could have if they needed to. But they're talking about, no, pure devotional service. That's the key point. That you have to see everything in relationship to. Then it has meaning. Right? So that's the whole idea, is that if one's sincere about devotional service, then Lord Chaitanya empowers. You see, so many devotees do amazing things, and you see it's because they're sincere. As long as that sincerity is there, it continues. It doesn't stop. If they at any point become proud of that position, you see it stops. And then if they become sincere, then it continues. The point is that sincerity is the key. That's what we're looking for. That's what Lord Chaitanya is looking for. And if that's there, then everything else falls into place. But sincere means we're following the order of the Guru and Krishna. Like that. It says, even though, although he may be engaged in many so-called material activities, because he's doing things inspired by Krishna. So he's not under the modes. So it's not material activities, even though it looks like it. But it's not.
Okay. It seems that we need a lot of to be reminded about pure devotional service.
Yes, yes.
And sometimes to because the tendency is to adjust with next and like that. You know?
Yes.
So yes, we need to be reminded. And so,
yes. Well, that's why we associate with devotees. That's why we read the scriptures.
But especially the advanced devotees.
That's there. But even in the scriptures, means here we're associating with Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami here. And then who else is that? Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is speaking here. He's talking about the associates.
Yes.
You know, how are they taking care? And, you know, what are they doing?
Yes.
Like
yes.
that. So just in these two pages, we've associated with so many people.
Yes.
Like that. And so that's then our inspiration. That's what we're inspired to act. That's what it said. That's the spirituals. You're inspired by this to act rather than by the bodily position. And so then it becomes nice. Because this is the important thing. Not the aspects of... in other words, what's the point being made? That's about pure devotional service and aspects of that. The example may be practical, you know, ways that you can connect or other things like that. But you have to see is that the important thing has to be, what's the point? And the example is only a medium. You know what I'm saying? So even we're discussing Varnashram, it's only as a medium for pure devotional service. You know, it's an agent. The agent gets things done on behalf of. So the Varnashram is an agent for doing these things. The devotee is the agent for doing the Lord's service. The Varnashram is a structure in which you can situate yourself. Means if you actually understand it. If you don't understand it, yes, this means nothing. But the point is Prabhupada and everybody's recommending it. You know? And so that's how you, otherwise how are you going to deal with your, means you can say is, oh, we don't need Varnashram, fine, move to the forest, be an avidhut. You don't need. Right? In Satyayuga they were Paramahamsas. They didn't have to deal with that. It doesn't mean that the etiquettes and all those things didn't continue. But they didn't.
Yes.
Someone saying push the button. So she's contacting you and saying, can you push the button, please?
Smartphones, but not smart about it.
Yes, yes. Well. Same time, you don't necessarily want them to go. There's many, how you say, themes on smartphones becoming too smart.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That they were expecting the monolith to come back. You know the shape of the monolith?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just that we're thinking it's supposed to be really big. Of course, the cow dung's also in the shape of a monolith. But now they called you to push the button. Or other buttons. So many buttons.
Bring the cow dung here.
What if the power goes up?
Okay. Yeah, then we start to think they need to generate, need this, that, and at the end then we'll, yeah. You know, how they say, the sadhu and the mouse? Until everybody's busy managing the whole thing to do that and no one's giving the classes. Right? To keep oneself free from material contamination and attain the Lord's favor, one must be sincerely eager to render service to the Lord. This is the only qualification necessary. Right? That's the qualification. Other things are just useful in performance of the service or in this whatever station you're in and all this. But they're not what create devotional service. Mm-hmm. In other words, you make the endeavor and it comes along, then great. But if you make the endeavor and it doesn't work, then you don't bother. Like that. So that's the whole thing. You just perform your duties. What comes from that, then that's what you work with. So that's the point. Sincerely eager to render service, that's the only qualification. That's what it says, Prabhupada, the only qualification. He doesn't say the main qualification or a qualification. He says the only qualification necessary. You can have other qualifications, but they're not necessary. That make sense? So, based on that, if you add more to it, it's nice. It's like you have something nice, and then you ornament that. Then it becomes better. But you can't say, is that, you know, because, okay, we got a nice earring here, then, you know, I can get married. Right? Does that make sense? You can marry the girl without the earring, but you can't, you know, whether you have the earring, then that won't work. You know, so that's the whole thing. You have the sincerity, that will make it work. You have all other things like that, material degrees and positions and authorities and techniques and stuff. But if there's no sincerity, you know, like that. As soon as one is favored by the mercy of the spiritual master and the Lord, one is immediately given all the power necessary to write books and propagate the Krishna consciousness movement without being hampered by material considerations. Right? Because whatever you can say, they're living under a tree, they have nothing. It's just like, let us say we want to write a book. Could we sit under a different tree every night and write things by hand? No, we have to have a nice list. So, whatever, you have that and that. So, point is by the Lord's grace, and there's so many people who do have a place to sit and do have the time, but they can't write. So the point is when Krishna blessed, that you can write, it happens no matter what's going on or where you are. Verses 136 to 237. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs Srila Rupa Goswami about Bhakti Rasa. 219, 136 to 138. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear Rupa, please listen to me. It is not possible to describe devotional service completely. Therefore, I am just trying to give you a synopsis of the symptoms of devotional service. The ocean of the transcendental mellows of devotional service is so big that one cannot estimate its length and breadth. Catch the... Lord Chaitanya's opening statement, You have the name of the book. However, just to help you taste it, I am describing but one drop. Right? So that's the whole point. You understand the drop, you understand the ocean. In this universe, there are limitless living entities in 8,400,000 species, and all are wandering within this universe. Srila Prabhupada. This is a challenge to so-called scientists and philosophers who presume that there are living entities on this planet only. So-called scientists are going to the moon, and they say that there's no life there. This does not tally with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's version. He says that everywhere within the universe there are unlimited numbers of living entities in 8,400,000 different forms. In the Bhagavad Gita 2.24, we find that the living entities are sarvagata, which means that they can go anywhere. Right? You see, Prabhupada's always using it in that context. Right? So that's the meaning of, you know, being everywhere, not that one expands everywhere. This indicates there are living entities everywhere. They exist on land, in water, in air, in fire, and in ether. Thus, there are living entities in all types of material elements. Since the entire material universe is composed of five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, why should there be living entities on one planet and not others? Such a foolish version can never be accepted by Vedic students. From the Vedic literatures, we understand that there are living entities on each and every planet, regardless of whether the planet is composed of earth, water, fire, or air. These living entities may not have the same forms that are found on this planet Earth, but they have different forms composed of different elements. Even on this Earth, we can see that the forms of land animals are different from the forms of aquatics. According to the circumstance, living conditions differ. But undoubtedly, there are living entities everywhere. You know, it's just like, let's say we have, you know, how you say, Professor Octopus in the ocean. He's studying the ocean and all that. And so, therefore, then on the land, then in his mind, there'll be no life. Right? Because, you know, they can't go out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why should we deny the existence of living entities on this or that planet? Those who have claimed to have gone to the moon have not gone there, or else with their imperfect vision, they cannot actually perceive the particular type of living entities there. So it's either they did not go there, or because of their imperfect senses that are unsuited to that environment, they couldn't see what's there. You know, that's the living entities are described as ananta, or unlimited. Nonetheless, they are said to belong to 8,400,000 species, as stated in Vishnu Purana. There's unlimited living entities, but they all belong to 8,400,000 species. They're all within those categories. As stated in Vishnu Purana, Jala Ja Nava Lakshana Stavara Laksha Vimshati Krimayo Urudha Shankyaka Pakshinam Dasa Lakshanam Trimsha Lakshani Pashava Chatur Lakshani Manushaha. There are 900,000 species living in the water. There are also 2 million non-moving living entities, stavara, such as trees and plants. There are also 1,100,000 species of insects and reptiles. And there are 1 million species of birds. As far as quadrupeds are concerned, there are 3 million varieties. And there are 400,000 human species. End quote. Some of these species may exist on one planet and not on another. But in any case, within all the planets of the universe, and even in the sun, there are living entities. This is the verdict of the Vedic literatures. So spread throughout the universe, you have these 8,400,000. And even as it is here, every year they find more living entities that they didn't even know were species that were even there. You know, they think, oh yes, we've figured them all out. Then they find out there's more. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting, it seems here, is that so much of the... Because some move here and there. But, you know, the insects, reptiles, that also includes... Because it mentioned up there, What is it? Cream IO means also the
bacteria.
Bacteria, worms. Basically, it means anything other than the others. You know, they all fit in there. Prabhu continued. The length and breadth of the living entity is described as 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair. This is the original subtle nature of the living entity. If we divide, quote, if we divide the tip of a hair into 100 parts and then take one of these parts and divide it again into 100 parts, that very fine division is the sign of but one of the numberless living entities. They are all chit-kana, particles of spirit, not matter. Srila Prabhupada. This is quoted from the commentary on the portion of Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein the Vedas personified offer their obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna confirms this statement in Bhagavad Gita 15:7. Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhutas sanatana. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Lord Sri Krishna personally identifies himself with the minute living entities. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Spirit, the Supersoul, and the living entities are his very minute parts and parcels. Of course, we cannot divide the tip of a hair into such fine particles, but spiritually such small particles can exist. Spiritual strength is so powerful that a mere atomic portion of spirit can be the biggest brain in the material world. The same spiritual spark is within an ant and within the body of Brahma. According to his karma, material activities, the spiritual spark attains a certain type of body. Material activities are carried out in goodness, passion, ignorance, or a combination of these. According to the mixture of the modes of material nature, the living entity is awarded a particular type of body. This is the conclusion. 2:19, 141-142. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. If we divide the tip of a hair into 100 parts and then take one part and divide this into another 100 parts, that 10,000th part is the dimension of the living entity. This is the verdict of the chief Vedic mantras. Footnote 29. The first three padas of this verse from the Panchadasi Chitra Deepa 81 are taken from the Svetasvatara Upanishad 5.9. Right, so the Upanishads then defining that, right? Because it's about the soul, right? Jnanamoya means then you work on the platform of the soul. So then you have to know what the soul is. Yes.
It seems that here we see that Srila Prabhupada says this is the Vedic conclusion. He gives the Siddhanta.
Yes. That's the point. You have to start from Siddhanta, and then you can expand out. Otherwise, if we simply discuss and speculate, you know, it's always having a, so what's your opinion? Or what do you think of this? Or, well, what about, you know, the, that's nice, but then where's the basis in what is the standard? Then you can have, you know, we could do it like this, or we could do it like that, and there can be different approaches to it. But it's not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of this is the principle, and then what we do, you know, this way or that way. Does that make sense? You know.
Yes.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada, the living entity is one with and different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As spirit soul, the living entity is one in quality with the Supreme Lord. However, the Supreme Lord is bigger than the biggest, and the living entity is the smallest of the small. This quotation is the third pada of a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 11:16-11. We see, you know, here, 11th canto, then that's all the technical point. Now here Lord Chaitanya is speaking and all that, so he's bringing this point up. 2:19, 143-146. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. O Lord, although the living entities who have accepted material bodies are spiritual and unlimited in number, if they were all pervading, there would be no question of their being under your control. If they are accepted, however, as particles of the eternally existing spiritual entity, as part of you, who are the Supreme Spirit Soul, we must conclude that they are always under your control. The living entities are simply satisfied with being identical with you as spiritual particles then they will be happy being controllers of so many things. The conclusion as the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are one and the same is a faulty conclusion. It is not the fact. Footnote 30. This verse, which is also from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.30, was spoken by the personified Vedas. Right, so they're pointing out is that being part and parcel of the Lord, we're pervaded by the Lord, not that we pervade.
Yes.
So that means we're not equal. Otherwise, if we're equal, he's controlling, we're controlling. But no, he's controlling, we're controlled. That's the principle. So, the unlimited living entities can be divided into two divisions, right? So you see here, he's talking to Rupa Goswami, but all the things he's pointing out here, this is all what we're studying in the Sandarbha. Like that, you know? Because we say, oh, that's all technical. This is what's going on in these books. Just, we're only seeing this now. Now if you go back and read, then you'll see, oh, these things are there. The unlimited living entities can be divided into two divisions. Those that can move and those that cannot move, right? Because that makes the overall. So the 8,400,000 goes between moving and non-moving. Among living entities that can move, there are birds, aquatics, and animals. Although the living entities known as human beings are very small in quantity, that division may be still further subdivided. For there are many uncultured human beings like Malechas, Pulindas, Baudas, and Sabaras. Remember, Malechas means against the Vedic culture. So that's why those that oppose the Vedic culture, they're actually in a position they can't understand what is the Vedic culture, therefore they think it's not important. Among human beings, those who are followers of the Vedic principles are considered civilized. That, and you were saying they said he's not mentioning about the Varnashram? It's right there. The opening is this. Is that they're the ones that this book is for. Those who are following the Vedic verse, that they can follow it. But it's not about Varnashram. It's about serving Krishna. So that's why when Lord Chaitanya rejected, Ramananda Rai opened with that, performing your duties in Varnashram, you know, for in service to the Lord. He said that's external. Because the point is about pleasing the Lord and therefore that reciprocation, that's the internal point. So then you go forward with that. He didn't reject and not follow Varnashram. They were very careful about their positions and the Varnashram and their dealings and everything like that. So that's the whole thing. So, yeah. Like when we say about polishing the cage and not taking care of the bird, that doesn't, so to feed the bird, does that mean you don't polish the cage? Of course you polish the cage, but you make sure you feed, the only point is about the bird, so you feed the bird. The bird's the important part. The bird's fed, and then you keep the cage nice. So it's inverted. So it's there, but it's just part of that. Okay, among human beings, those who are followers of the Vedic principles are considered civilized. Among these, almost half simply give lip service while committing all kinds of sinful activities against these principles. And these are the ones that follow it,
yes.
Right? Let alone the ones that oppose it. Such people do not care for the regulative principles, right? So they don't take up those. They just kind of they say that we're in there. You know, it's just like you have so many people of so many the world religions. They'll claim I'm from this religion, and they don't follow anything from it. Like that. I remember one devotee talking about that they were from a particular religious background. You know, so they follow that culture. But at the same time, as far as philosophy goes, the parents were atheists. Right? So they were atheists, but religiously means by the culture, they identified with that particular community. You know? So that's just giving lip service to the... Srila Prabhupada, the word Veda means knowledge. Supreme knowledge consists of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead and our relationship with Him and acting according to that relationship. Right? So that's going to be the whole point. Understanding, you know, understanding the Lord and our relationship and then acting in that relationship. Right? So then that relationship, that Lord and the relationship that's been given to Sanatana Goswami. Acting in that relationship, then Rupa Goswami brings it out. Sanatan always also explains it because it's part of Sambandha Gyan. Like that. Action in accordance with the Vedic principles is called religion. Right? Because it's that you're taking the principles, acting on that, that's religion. It's not a particular faith. It's following the laws of God, that's religion. It means the laws themselves are religion. You follow it, you're religious. You don't follow it, you're irreligious. It's not that, oh, if I have faith, then there's a religion. No, the religion is already there. Everything already has its inherent religion. Right? Religion means following the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedic principles are the injunctions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aryans are civilized human beings who have been following the Vedic principles since time immemorial. Right? So it's not that they just came about it recently. No one can trace out the history of the Vedic principles set forth so that man might understand the Supreme Being. Literature and knowledge that seeks the Supreme Being can be accepted as a bona fide religious system. But there are many different types of religious systems according to the place, the disciples, and the people's capacity to understand. Right? So then you have to understand is that it goes that, but it goes down. So if they can't understand the Vedic principles, they may be given other things, like be good, be nice. You know, like, you know, one of our, I say, popular world preachers. Then he himself would follow the religious principles. But he would preach sub-religious principles because, as it was, people were just on anamoy. So he just, you know, trying to get him to follow religious principles, at least establish the pranamoy. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're saying, oh no, we should just establish goodness. Somebody already did that. You know? Somebody's already done that. You know, and one third of the planet follows that, supposedly. But they're not moving forward in developing love of God. Therefore, then you need a little bit more. Yeah. Yes, yes. The highest type of religious system is described. So religion means following the laws of God. And so you can follow at preliminary levels and more advanced. But he is saying the highest type of religious system is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6. Thus, Savai Pum Sam Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Adhoksa Jay. The highest form of religion is that by which one becomes fully conscious of the existence of God, including his form, name, qualities, pastimes, abode, and all pervasive features. Right? So to say that, oh, we're from here and India's over there means they don't understand at all Krishna's all pervasive feature. It means like zero. You know, otherwise it's Krishna's creation. How can you say this is our land? I mean, they do have to make a song about that. This land is your land. This land is my land. It means, you know, from the Atlantic to the Pacific and like that. You know, so yeah, you do have that song. So,
Maharaj, it is possible in our movement to have different form of religion.
Form of religion, yes, but you have to understand there's hierarchy.
Yes.
Just like what Prabhu pointed out this morning, is first you get rid of the absolute truth, then you can say all these different things are the same. And then you can point out that whatever I'm doing is always superior, because Atmavan Manyate Jagat. But the point is here, no, the highest form is already described in Bhagavatam. That's given by our acharyas. It's already there. Then you have to see how you apply that. But to bring up these upadis means, yes, but there are many types of religious sin according to the place, the disciples, and the people's capacity to understand. So, yes, okay, some people, great. But don't claim that it's equal. Don't claim that it's the highest form of religion. That's cheating.
Yes.
You know, that's cheating. Pushing button again. It's not happy. So have they heard any of this?
No, only the video goes on.
Oh, because the sound goes on the whole time. Always there. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Okay, just the video.
So now we can have some capacity to understand by seeing, by hearing.
Yes, by hearing is the best. Seeing and then, you know, having Maya, you know, kick you around the block, then that's the third way of learning. But the worst is when you get kicked around and you don't learn.
Yes.
then that's useless. So that's why the Vedic system has all three. They tell you, you have an opportunity to see, and then you have an opportunity to experience. You just pick which place works for you. So that's the point, is whichever works for you, that's the place to be. If you don't learn by hearing, then you learn by experiencing, then you should be there. If you learn by, don't learn by hearing, but you learn by seeing, you should be there. You know, so Prabhupada set up the movement so nicely that everybody can hear everything, everybody can see everything, and whoever wants, they can experience. No? So that's there. And so it works very perfectly. And different people may hear in one area and catch it. And in another area they have to see it, and in a different area they have to experience. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say that brahmachari is, you know, by hearing about grihastha life and that and seeing it, then he sees, okay, I don't want to need to get involved. But then he's going out on Sankirtan and all that, and he's doing very well. But he's becoming proud. So he's heard about not being proud. He's seen others become proud. You know, we had the, you know, like Daksha and all these guys. Like, you know, it's like Virabhadra, right, takes off his head. And Lord Shiva then puts his head, he could put his regular head back on. No, he tossed it into the fire, didn't he? So, but he puts a goat head on it. You know, he could have chosen something else, you know, something a little bit more cute and cuddly or something, you know, nice koala head or something. No, he picks a goat head. You know, like that. They got those weirdo eyes, and you know, like that. His wife must have been really annoyed. Like, you know, that's funny little beard. You know, yeah, a problem. So that we hear about it, but then maybe he has to get, you know, somehow or another. Maya has to kick him, and others like her. And then he catches, okay, I shouldn't be proud, even though in another area he's learned by seeing or hearing. So that's the thing. Every living entity, being, you know, unique in their particular position in the material world, you know, it's unique that they happen to be there, but the combinations are already set out. So it's just one of any combination. And so they find what works for them. That's why we're a society. So we can associate. Right? So someone who's more advanced in one area, that, like you see, but sometimes for kirtan, like that, you know, you're going to have different devotees are very expert at that. You know, someone else in deity worship, someone else in giving lectures, someone else in preaching, someone else in book distribution. You know, someone else in their sadhana or their chanting or Vaishnav etiquette or like this. So whoever is good in an area, then others can take advantage and learn, be inspired by that. So that's the beauty of the Vedic system, is all these religious systems can work together. And as Vaishnavas, it becomes even more simplified. You know, just the essential, the principal points are there. And then from that, then everybody is able to be engaged in Krishna service. And get that association, you know, wherever it is. You know, just like the guy who leads the kirtan may be fabulous at kirtan, but you may not do something else with them. You know, so that's it. The guy who sit down and chant japa with me may be great there, but that's something else. You may not take his example. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the beauty of a society. So we have to see is that it's all based on that core principle of the pure devotional service, and it's applied. So you have to have structures. That's why civilized human beings use the Vedic structure. Uncivilized, then they don't use. And even lower class, they oppose the Vedic system. You know, like that. So it's just, you know, that's the way it is. It's just, it's proper. Could you imagine people talking about cooking and that, and you have this nice kitchen and all that, they don't know how to use it, so they're out in the backyard with their tin can and their couple of bricks and all that, and then they're trying to say, oh, that's your kitchen, you know, like that. That's a kitchen for over there. We're from out in the backyard, so this is our thing, like this, you know. That's so much better. But, hey, people like their tin cans. When everything is completely known, that is the perfection of Vedic knowledge. So when you know Krishna and everything about him, that's the perfection of knowledge, not other things. Those that are there, they may be there, they come up, you know them, you can use them for Krishna, nice. They're secondary aspects. They're not the primary. Primary knowledge is knowing Krishna. The fulfillment of Vedic knowledge is systematic knowledge of the characteristics of God, because everything's connected to him. So when you see everything in connection to him, you actually have knowledge. This is confirmed by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15. Vedaish cha saver aham eva vedyaha. The aim of Vedic knowledge is to understand God. Therefore, those who are actually following Vedic knowledge and searching after God cannot commit sinful activities against the Supreme Lord's order. Right? He gives the order, you can't do that. Right? However, in this age of Kali, although men profess to belong to so many different kinds of religions, most of them commit sinful activities against the order of the Vedic scriptures. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore says herein, Veda nishidha papa kare dharma nahi gane. In this age, men may profess a religion, but they actually do not follow the principles. Instead, they commit all kinds of sins. Right? These people talk about, you know, all these things, everyone being equal, but they're not equal. They're only nice to their particular group of people. Right? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. Among the followers of Vedic knowledge, most are following the process of fruitive activity and distinguishing between good and bad work, right? For profit. Right. Out of the many such sincere, fruitive actors, there may be one who is actually wise. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur states that the word karma nishta refers to one who aspires to enjoy the results of his good work and pious activity. Some followers of Vedic principles offer everything to the absolute truth and do not aspire to enjoy the results of their pious actions. Remember before? It was mentioned about naishkarmya, like that. So someone who works without attachment, that's goodness. If you're working, then for the result, that's passion. Even though you may be using the principles, living a lifestyle of goodness, but your ultimate point is, so you're using goodness for passion. But you're supposed to use goodness, you know, to go to pure goodness. These are also considered among the karma nishtas, right? They're fixed, but now they're detached, so they're going on a higher level, right? They're performing their karma, but without attachment now, because they're attached to what they'll get later, right? Sometimes you see pious men earn money with great hardship and then spend the money for some pious cause by opening public charities, schools, and hospitals. Whether one earns money for himself or for the public benefit, he is called a karma nishta. You know, nishta means he's fixed. Right? At least the rich guy you call karma nishta. At least he's steady, right? He's got money, right? Out of millions of karma nishtas, there may be one who is wise. Right? Yeah. And we're talking about, oh no, but the professionals and this and that, in fact, they're the karma nishtas. So we're looking for that one out of a million. Right. Those who try to avoid fruitive activity and who become silent in order to merge into the spiritual existence of the absolute truth are generally known as jnanis, or wise men. So they understand this is all useless. Right? They are not interested in fruitive activity, but in merging into the Supreme. In either case, both the karma nishtas and the jnanis are interested in personal benefit. Right? So that's why Rupa Goswami is saying, pure devotion means no karma, no jnana. Like that. Because even though they're one in a million and they're the wise one, it's still material. So you have to keep going up, right? That's the whole point. Lord Chaitanya is taking us all the way up. He's starting with the Lord, and then he's starting the living entity. He's this big, and then he's in all these species, and then there's humans of humans, and there's this, and like this. He's gradually bringing it up. The karmis are directly interested in personal benefit within the material world, and the jnanis are interested in merging into the existence of the Supreme. The jnanis maintain that fruitive activity is imperfect. For them, perfection is the cessation of work and the merging into the Supreme existence. That is her goal in life. The Gyani wants to extinguish the distinction between knowledge, the knower, and the aim of knowledge. This philosophy is called monism or oneness and is characterized by spiritual silence. Right? So for the devotee, they're trying to come to that point. That's for them is just the platform on which they work. The goal for the monist is the platform on which devotees function. And then they take that you know, knowledge, knower, and the aim of knowledge, then they use that in Krishna's service. So for one, it's the goal, the prayojana. For the devotees, it's just where you work. You know, it's just like you're going to cook, you use the kitchen. The gyanis are trying to get to the kitchen and merge into the kitchen. And the devotees go into the kitchen and use it and cook something for Krishna. Right? You know, and they just have, you know, some assistant there that's always, you know, wiping the countertops to get rid of all those guys merging into the counters and stuff. You know. Can you sweep up all these Mayavadis? 219, 148, 149. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, out of many millions of such wise men, one may actually become liberated, mukta. Yeah, so that means you took a million karmis, one may be wise. Now you take millions of such jnanis, one may actually become liberated. And out of many millions of such liberated persons, right, a pure devotee of Lord Krishna is very difficult to find. So you see how rare it is. So the Prabhupada could go and establish a movement with so many people. Lord Chaitanya is establishing this mission. And it's coming down from Rupa Goswami. It's given to him. And then it comes down the line to do that. And so many people, that is so amazing. Right? Because otherwise, you see, for someone who's interested in pure devotion, it's very rare. So we have to appreciate that when it says knowledge, its supreme knowledge is about the Lord. Other knowledges, as we saw before, is aparavidya. It's material knowledge to be engaged in the Lord's service. But unless you understand what is engagement, what is pure devotional service, there's a chance that you will take the secondary knowledge, think it's primary. And because you have that knowledge, now you are, you know, advanced. Because the devotee of Lord Krishna is desireless, he is peaceful. Fruit of workers desire material enjoyment. Jnanis desire liberation, and yogis desire material opulence. Therefore, they are all lusty and cannot be peaceful. Right? Because they want things, and then because they want things, then they work to get them. Then they get them, they're happy, and because they're happy, they will be distressed. And so they can't be, at any state, they think about them, they're not peaceful. They endeavor for them, they're not peaceful. They get, they're not peaceful. And then they lose, or some obstacle comes up, they're not peaceful. So it's, yes?
I was thinking in the morning that studying Paramatma Sandarbha, we can help devotees, and nowadays seminars are very popular.
Yes.
And our friend is attending one of these seminars right now.
Oh, okay. Attending or leading?
No, attending.
Okay.
So then I was thinking, based on Paramatma Sandarbha, we can develop seminar and relieve devotees of stress. So if I'm not the doer, I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
There's nothing to stress about.
Yeah.
Because devotees are, you know, very stressed.
Yeah.
But then if Lord is the doer, I perform my duties and the results up to him. And then there's nothing to be stressed about.
Yes. So then that one's inspiration is the Lord. Pleasing the Lord, working for the Lord. Then you're inspired to work. You know, so but what results? Yeah, could do. Why not?
No, because Paramatma Sandarbha gives so many details. So that's the main, like a theme.
Yes.
But then you can really develop it. And based on Vedanta, actually to prove and help people.
Yes, yes.
Because if I'm the doer, I will be always stressed. That's the fact.
Yes.
That's why this verse, Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami
Sakala Ashanta. Yes.
They're always
Yeah, always, always. They have to be. It's just kind of like it's the, you know, anyone within whatever is there, up to the pure devotee, they're all Ashanta. They have to be. That's the material world's about. How to not be peaceful. Srila Prabhupada. The devotee of Lord Krishna has no desire other than serving Krishna. Even so-called liberated people are full of desires. Fruit of actors desire better living accommodations. And jnanis want to be one with the Supreme. Yogis desire material opulence, yogic perfections, and magic. Right? Because how many of them do we hear going through to the pure devotional service? We hear about them in Bhagavatam.
Yes.
But, you know, even Patanjali's not talking about that. And anyway, because they have these material desires, when these things come up, they'll take those. So that means those who have gone, we see in the Bhagavatam, like Kardama and others, they've gone through the system, the pure devotional service. That means they went past these. Those were there, but they didn't care. You know, does that make sense? You know, it's like when you come out of the off the airplane and there's that short little thing where they run you through all the shops before you come out, you know. So some people stop. You just keep going. So all these non-devotees are lusty, kami, because they desire something. They cannot have peace, right? They're just taking a different approach, like that, a different kind of aspect or goal, but they're the same anxiety. The peace formula is given by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 5:29. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suridam sarva bhutanam yatva mam shantim ritchati. One who simply understands that throughout the entire universe, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and beneficiary of all kinds of sacrifices, penance, and austerities, which should be performed only to attain his devotional service. That Krishna is the supreme being and thus the proprietor of all the material worlds. And that Krishna is the only friend who can actually do good to all living entities. Suridam sarva bhutanam. One who understands these three principles about Krishna immediately becomes desireless, nishkama, and therefore peaceful. Right? So this nishkama here you see is that it's in connection with Krishna. They're actually nishkama. Because you saw before it was mentioned about the nishkamis. But they were just kind of like the senior karmis. Because they're doing nishkam now, but they want results later.
Yes.
Now, you know, this lifetime, they're very simple and austere. And they expect from doing that life, the next lifetime, they'll go to the heavenly planets. I don't think that they're planning on being detached and renounced there. Yeah. And it says it's all performed only to attain its devotional service. That's the meaning of, then all the activities are done. You know. A Krishna Bhakta knows that his friend and protector in all respects is Krishna, who is able to do anything for his devotee. Krishna says, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. Bhagavad Gita 9:31. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Since Krishna gives this assurance, the devotee lives in Krishna and has no desire for personal benefit. The background for the devotee is the all good himself. Why should the devotee aspire for something good for himself? His only business is to please the Supreme by rendering as much service as possible. A Krishna Bhakta has no desire for his own personal benefit. He is completely protected by the Supreme. Avasya Rakshibe Krishna Vishvasa Palana. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that he is desireless because Krishna will give him protection in all circumstances. It is not that he expects any assistance from Krishna. He simply depends on Krishna as a child depends on his parents. The child does not know how to expect service from his parents. But he is always protected nevertheless. This is called nishkama, desirelessness. He's just always interacting with them, and he's always taken care of. Although karmis, jnanis, and yogis fulfill their desires by performing various activities, they are never satisfied. Akarmi may work very hard to acquire $1 million, but as soon as he gets $1 million, he desires another million. For the karmis, there is no end of desire. The more the karmi gets, the more he desires. The jnanis cannot be desireless because their intelligence is unsound. They want to merge into the Brahman effulgence, but even though they may be raised to that platform, they cannot be satisfied there. There are many jnanis or sannyasis who, after taking sannyas and giving up the world as false, return to the world to engage in politics or philanthropy, or to open schools and hospitals. This means that they could not attain the real Brahman, Brahma Satyam. They have to come down to the material platform to engage in philanthropic activity. Thus they again cultivate desires. And when these desires are exhausted, they desire something different. Therefore, the jnani cannot be nishkama, desireless. Nor can, so, in other words, when we're using in the context of these desireless, that means immediate. So only devotees can be desireless because it's for Krishna. So we may practice that the immediate is there and then it's given to Krishna, but with sometime that's renunciation. But with time it comes, it's always for Krishna. So that's sannyas. Right? So that's the point, is that in the Daiva Varnashram system, since it's about Krishna, everybody, as devotees, they're all Brahmins, everybody is sannyasis, no matter what their position by duties is in Varnashram. That's what's not understood about the system. And one thinks, oh, I am on this, but it still doesn't mean you don't do your duties. Or if I'm doing my duties, I can't be like that. But that's the point. Both can go on. That's the uniqueness. Nor can the yogis be desireless, for they desire yogic perfections in order to exhibit some magical feats and gain popularity. People gather around these yogis, and the yogis desire more and more adulation. Because they misuse their mystic power, they fall down again into the material platform. It is not possible for them to become nishkama, desireless. The conclusion is that only the devotees, who are simply satisfied in serving the Lord, can actually become desireless. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says here, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama. Since the Krishna Bhakta, the devotee of Krishna, is satisfied with Krishna, there is no possibility of fall down. You're absorbed in Krishna, because material means without Krishna. You're absorbed in Krishna, then there's no question of material. 219.150. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, O great sage, out of many millions of materially liberated people who are free from ignorance, and out of many millions of siddhas who have nearly attained perfection, there's hardly one pure devotee of Narayana. Only such a devotee is actually completely satisfied and peaceful. Srila Prabhupada. This verse is quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 6.14.5. The Narayana Parayana, the devotee of Lord Narayana, is the only blissful person. One who becomes a Narayana Parayana is already liberated from material bondage. He already possesses all the perfections of yoga. Unless one comes to the platform of Narayana Parayana and passes over the platform of Bhukti Mukti Siddhi, he cannot be fully satisfied. That is the pure devotional stage. Anyavilashita shunyam jnana karmanyanavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam paktir uttama. One who desires nothing but Krishna and who is not influenced by the process of jnana marg, cultivation of knowledge, actually becomes free from ignorance. Because if you're interested in practicing, cultivating intelligence and logic and all that, and thinking that that's going to be the thing, then you can't get free from ignorance. Because ignorance means not knowing your relationship with Krishna. Yes. A first-class person is one who is not influenced by karma, fruit of activity, or yoga, mystic power. He simply depends on Krishna and is satisfied in his devotional service. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11. According to Srimad Bhagavatam 6.17.28, Narayana parasarve na kutaschana bibhyati. Such a person is never afraid of anything. For him, heaven and hell are the same. Not knowing the situation of a Narayana Parayana, rascals become envious. By the grace of Narayana, a devotee is situated in the most opulent position in the material world. Rascals are envious of Narayana and his devotee. But the devotee endeavors to please another devotee of Narayana, because he knows that by pleasing Narayana's representative, one directly pleases Lord Narayana. Therefore, a devotee offers the best comforts and facilities to his spiritual master. Outsiders who have no knowledge of Narayana are envious of both Narayana and his devotee. Consequently, when they see that Narayana's devotee is opulently situated, they become even more envious. But when the devotee of Narayana asks such foolish people to come live with him in the same comfortable situation, they do not agree, because they cannot give up illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. Therefore, the materialist refuses the company of a Narayana Parayana, although he is envious of the devotee's material situation. Yeah, because Krishna arranges, Krishna gives, like that. Someone says, oh, so much this and that, but Krishna's arranging. So you surrender, you do your service, and then if it's supposed to be there, it will. And if it's not, it won't. Like that. You know, we see Yudhishthira had unlimited wealth. Then he had nothing. Then he had unlimited wealth. Then he had nothing. You know, so it's just, you know, it's just whatever Krishna wants. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, according to their karma, all living entities are wandering throughout the entire universe. Some of them are being elevated to the upper planetary systems, and some are going down into the lower planetary systems. Out of many millions of wandering living entities, one who is very fortunate gets an opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. By the mercy of both Krishna and the spiritual master, such a person receives the seed of the creeper of devotional service. Srila Prabhupada, when we speak of Brahmananda, we refer to the whole universe, or to the cluster of many millions of universes. Right? So he's either wandering around within a universe, or he could be wandering around all the universes. In all the universes, there are innumerable planets, and there are innumerable living entities upon those planets, in the air, on land, and in the water. There are millions and trillions of living entities everywhere, and they are engaged by Maya in suffering and enjoying the results of their fruit of activity life after life. This is the position of the materially conditioned living entities. Out of many of these living entities, one who is fortunate, Bhagyavan, comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master by Krishna's mercy. Krishna is situated in everyone's heart, and if one desires something, Krishna fulfills one's desire. The living entity, by chance or fortune, comes in contact with the Krishna conscious movement and wishes to associate with that movement. Krishna, who is situated in everyone's heart, gives him the chance to meet the bona fide spiritual master. This is called Guru Krishna Prasada. Krishna is prepared to bestow his mercy upon all living entities. And as soon as a living entity desires the Lord's mercy, the Lord immediately gives him an opportunity to meet a bona fide spiritual master. Such a fortunate person is fortified by both Krishna and the spiritual master. He is helped from within by Krishna and from without by the spiritual master. Both are prepared to help the sincere living being become freed from material bondage. How one can become this fortunate can be seen in the life of Srila Narad Muni. In his previous life, he was born of a maidservant. Although he was not born into a prestigious position, his mother was fortunately engaged in rendering service to some Vaishnavas. When these Vaishnavas were resting during the Chaturmas period, the boy Narada took the opportunity to engage in their service. Taking compassion upon the boy, the Vaishnavas offered him the remnants of their food. By serving these Vaishnavas and obeying their orders, the boy became the object of their sympathy. And by the Vaishnavas' unknown mercy, he gradually became a pure devotee. In the next life, he was Narad Muni, the most exalted of Vaishnavas and the most important guru and acharya of Vaishnavas. Hmm? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.